Chapter 14. An old-fashioned card party, the clergyman's versus the story of the convict's return. Several guests who were assembled in the old parlor rose to greet Mr. Pickwick and his friends upon their entrance. And during the performance of the ceremony of introduction, with all due formalities, Mr. Pickwick had leisure to observe the appearance, and speculate upon the characters and pursuits, of the persons by whom he was surrounded, a habit in which he, in common with many other great men, delighted to indulge. A very old lady, in a lofty cap and faded silk gown, no less a personage than Mr. Wardle's mother, occupied the post of honor on the right-hand corner of the chimney-piece, and various certificates of her having been brought up in the way she should go when young, and of her not having departed from it when old, ornamented the walls, in the form of samplers of ancient date, worsted landscapes of equal antiquity, and crimson silk tea kettle holders of a more modern period. The aunt, the two young ladies, and Mr. Wardle, each vying with the other in paying zealous and unremitting attentions to the old lady, crowded round her easy chair, one holding her ear trumpet, another an orange, and a third a smelling bottle, while a fourth was busily engaged in patting and punching the pillows which were arranged for her support. On the opposite side sat a bald-headed old gentleman, with a good-humored, benevolent face, the clergyman of Dingley Dell, and next him sat his wife, a stout, blooming old lady, who looked as if she were well skilled, not only in the art and mystery of manufacturing homemade cordials greatly to other people's satisfaction, but of tasting them occasionally very much to her own. A little hard-headed, ripstone pippin-faced man was conversing with a fat old gentleman in one corner, and two or three more old gentlemen, and two or three more old ladies, sat bolt upright and motionless on their chairs, staring very hard at Mr. Pickwick and his fellow voyagers. Apostrophe Mr. Pickwick, mother, apostrophe, said Mr. Wardle, at the very top of his voice. Ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the old lady, shaking her head. I can't hear you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick, grandma. Apostrophe, apostrophe, screamed both the young ladies together. Ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the old lady. Well, it don't much matter. He don't care for an old woman like me, I dare say. Apostrophe, I assure you, ma'am, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, grasping the old lady's hand, and speaking so loud, that the exertion imparted a crimson hue to his benevolent countenance. I assure you, ma'am, that nothing delights me more than to see a lady of your time of life heading so fine a family, and looking so young and well. Apostrophe, ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the old lady, after a short pause. It's all very fine, I dare say, but I can't hear him. Apostrophe, grandma's rather put out now, apostrophe, said Miss Isabella Wardle, in a low tone, but she'll talk to you presently. Apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick nodded his readiness to humor the infirmities of age, and entered into a general conversation with the other members of the circle. Delightful situation this, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick. Delightful. Apostrophe, apostrophe, echoed Messrs. Snodgrass, Tubman, and Winkle. Well, I think it is, apostrophe, said Mr. Wardle. There ain't a better spot o' ground in all Kent, sir, apostrophe, said the hard-headed man with the pippin face. There ain't indeed, sir, I'm sure there ain't, sir. Apostrophe, the hard-headed man looked triumphantly round, as if he had been very much contradicted by somebody, but had got the better of him at last. There ain't a better spot o' ground in all Kent, apostrophe, said the hard-headed man again, after a pause. Sep Mullins Meadows, apostrophe, observed the fat man solemnly. Mullins Meadows, apostrophe, apostrophe, ejaculated the other, with profound contempt. Ah, Mullins Meadows, apostrophe, repeated the fat man. Reglar good land that, apostrophe, interposed another fat man. And so it is, sure lie, apostrophe, said a third fat man. Everybody knows that, apostrophe, said the corpulent host. The hard-headed man looked dubiously round, but finding himself in a minority, assumed a compassionate air and said no more. What are they talking about? Inquired the old lady of one of her granddaughters, in a very audible voice. For, like many deaf people, she never seemed to calculate on the possibility of other persons hearing what she said herself. About the land, Grandma. What about the land? Nothing the matter, is there? No, no. Mr. Miller was saying our land was better than Mullins Meadows. How should he know anything about it? Inquired the old lady indignantly. Miller's a conceited coxcomb, and you may tell him I said so. Saying which, the old lady, quite unconscious that she had spoken above a whisper, drew herself up, and looked carving knives at the hard-headed delinquent. Come, come, said the bustling host, with a natural anxiety to change the conversation. What say you to a rubber, Mr. Pickwick? I should like it of all things, replied that gentleman. But pray don't make up one on my account. Oh, I assure you, mother's very fond of a rubber, said Mr. Wardle. Ain't you, mother? The old lady, who was much less deaf on this subject than on any other, replied in the affirmative. Joe. Said the gentleman. Joe, damn that, oh, here he is. Put out the card tables. The lethargic youth contrived, without any additional rousing, to set out two card tables, the one for Pope Joan, and the other for whist. The whist players were Mr. Pickwick and the old lady, Mr. Miller and the fat gentleman. The round game comprised the rest of the company. The rubber was conducted with all that gravity of deportment and sedateness of demeanor which befit the pursuit entitled whist, a solemn observance, to which, as it appears to us, the title of game has been very irreverently and ignominiously applied. The round game table, on the other hand, was so boisterously merry as materially to interrupt the contemplations of Mr. Miller, who, not being quite so much absorbed as he ought to have been, contrived to commit various high crimes and misdemeanors, which excited the wrath of the fat gentleman to a very great extent, and called forth the good humor of the old lady in a proportionate degree. There, said the criminal Miller triumphantly, as he took up the odd trick at the conclusion of a hand that could not have been played better, I flatter myself. Impossible to have made another trick. Miller ought to have trumped the diamond, oughtn't he, sir? Said the old lady. Mr. Pickwick nodded assent. Ought I, though? Said the unfortunate, with a doubtful appeal to his partner. You ought, sir, said the fat gentleman, in an awful voice. Very sorry, said the crestfallen Miller. Much use that, growled the fat gentleman. Two by honors makes us eight, said Mr. Pickwick. Another hand. Can you one? Inquired the old lady. I can, replied Mr. Pickwick. Double, single, and the rub. Never was such luck, said Mr. Miller. Never was such cards, said the fat gentleman. A solemn silence, Mr. Pickwick humorous, the old lady serious, the fat gentleman captious, and Mr. Miller timorous. Another double, said the old lady, triumphantly making a memorandum of the circumstance, by placing 1 sixpence and a battered halfpenny under the candlestick. A double, sir, said Mr. Pickwick. Quite aware of the fact, sir, replied the fat gentleman sharply. Another game, with a similar result, was followed by a revoke from the unlucky Miller, on which the fat gentleman burst into a state of high personal excitement which lasted until the conclusion of the game, when he retired into a corner, and remained perfectly mute for 1 hour and 27 minutes, at the end of which time he emerged from his retirement, and offered Mr. Pickwick a pinch of snuff with the air of a man who had made up his mind to a Christian forgiveness of injuries sustained. The old lady's hearing decidedly improved, and the unlucky miller felt as much out of his element as a dolphin in a sentry box. Meanwhile, the round game proceeded right merrily. Isabella Wardle and Mr. Trundle went partners, apostrophe, and Emily Wardle and Mr. Snodgrass did the same, and even Mr. Tupman and the spinster and established a joint stock company of fish and flattery. Old Mr. Wardle was in the very height of his jollity, and he was so funny in his management of the board, and the old ladies were so sharp after their winnings, that the whole table was in a perpetual roar of merriment and laughter. There was one old lady who always had about half a dozen cards to pay for, at which everybody laughed, regularly every round, and when the old lady looked cross at having to pay, they laughed louder than ever, on which the old lady's face gradually brightened up, till at last she laughed louder than any of them. Then, when the spinster aunt got matrimony, apostrophe, the young ladies laughed afresh, and the spinster aunt seemed disposed to be pettish, till, feeling Mr. Tupman squeezing her hand under the table, she brightened up too, and looked rather knowing, as if matrimony in reality were not quite so far off as some people thought for. Whereupon everybody laughed again, and especially old Mr. Wardle, who enjoyed a joke as much as the youngest. As to Mr. Snodgrass, he did nothing but whisper poetical sentiments into his partner's ear, which made one old gentleman facetiously sly, about partnerships at cards and partnerships for life, and caused the aforesaid old gentleman to make some remarks thereupon, accompanied with divers winks and chuckles, which made the company very merry, and the old gentleman's wife especially so. And Mr. Winkle came out with jokes which are very well known in town, but are not all known in the country, and as everybody laughed at them very heartily, and said they were very capital, Mr. Winkle was in a state of great honor and glory, and the benevolent clergyman looked pleasantly on. For the happy faces which surrounded the table made the good old man feel happy too, and though the merriment was rather boisterous, still it came from the heart, and not from the lips, and this is the right sort of merriment after all. The evening glided swiftly away, in these cheerful recreations, and when the substantial, though homely supper had been dispatched, and the little party formed a social circle round the fire, Mr. Pickwick thought he had never felt so happy in his life, and at no time so much disposed to enjoy, and make the most of, the passing moment. "Now this," apostrophe said the hospitable host, who was sitting in great state next to the old lady's armchair, with her hand fast clasped in his, "this is just what I like the happiest moments of my life, have been passed at this old fireside. And I am so attached to it, that I keep up a blazing fire here every evening, until it actually grows too hot to bear it. Why, my poor old mother, here, used to sit before this fireplace upon that little stool, when she was a girl, didn't you, mother?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, the tear which starts unbidden to the eye, when the recollection of old times, and the happiness of many years ago is suddenly recalled, stole down the old lady's face as she shook her head with a melancholy smile. "You must excuse my talking about this old place, Mr. Pickwick," apostrophe resumed the host, after a short pause, "for I love it dearly, and know no other. The old houses and fields seem like living friends to me, and so does our little church with the ivy, about which, by the by, our excellent friend there made a song when he first came amongst us. Mr. Snodgrass, have you anything in your glass?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "plenty, thank you," apostrophe replied that gentleman, whose poetic curiosity had been greatly excited by the last observation of his entertainer. "I beg your pardon, but you were talking about the song of the ivy." "Apostrophe, you must ask our friend opposite about that," apostrophe said the host knowingly, indicating the clergyman by a nod of his head. "May I say that I should like to hear you repeat it, sir?" apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Snodgrass. Why, really, apostrophe replied the clergyman, it's a very slight affair, and the only excuse I have for having ever perpetrated it is, that I was a young man at the time. Such as it is, however, you shall hear it, if you wish. Apostrophe, a murmur of curiosity was of course the reply, and the old gentleman proceeded to recite, with the aid of sundry promptings from his wife, the lines in question. I call them, apostrophe said he, the ivy green, oh, a dainty plant is the ivy green, that creepeth or ruins old. Of right choice food are his meals, I ween, in his cell so lone and cold. The wall must be crumbled, the stone decayed, to pleasure his dainty whim, and the mouldering dust that years have made, is a merry meal for him. Creeping where no life is seen, a rare old plant is the ivy green. Fast he stealeth on, though he wears no wings, and a staunch old heart has he. How closely he twineth, how tight he clings to his friend the huge oak tree. And slyly he traileth along the ground, and his leaves he gently waves, as he joyously hugs, and crawleth round the rich mold of dead men's graves. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.